And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. Now let's get right on into our commentary for today. Our commentary is from the Vancouver Sun, and it's a letter from Betty Krawcheck entitled Prisoner of Conscience in the War of the Woods. And this letter is a little old now, but Betty's still in jail. So here we go. British Columbia Supreme Court Justice Glenn Parrett has recently sentenced me to a year in prison, that's Betty Krawcheck, without parole. A solid year is a big whack out of a 72-year-old woman's remaining years, but I accepted that possibility and responsibility that morning. I stepped out on the logging road to the Elijo Valley to stop Interfor logging trucks. This was not an impulsive decision in my life. Civil disobedience has reared its challenging head more than once. An early hands-on experience as part of a struggling union sensitized me to the need in society for occasional nonviolent protest. When the civil rights movement came to my home state of Louisiana, I was treated to a front-row demonstration of how civil disobedience could change things for better, and my education was furthered by the anti-Vietnam War protests. And while the Vietnam War eventually drove me and my family to Canada, the protests didn't stop until the mightiest government in the entire world had to give way to the will of its own people and bring the soldiers home. I was born in 1928. Had I been born in Canada, I would not have been considered a legal person. And it wasn't until 1929 that the British Privy Council overturned the Canadian Supreme Court ruling that denied women were persons and stated unequivocally that women were indeed to be described as legal persons. Was the British Privy Council less sexist? I don't think so. They were simply staring civil disobedience in the face in the form of thousands of uppity British, American, and Canadian women who weren't afraid of jail. The law changes as we change and as we as a people demand more equality. Today in Canada, I think too many judges refuse to recognize the evolution of law. They prefer to think the law has come to them all of a piece, conceived in purity like the Immaculate Conception, born in an unsullied state with no mitigating factors handed down by the gods, immutable and unchanging. In fact, the law comes to us like all human births, through struggle, pain, and blood, not from the gods on high, but from ordinary people who shape and push and create the law, usually into a more equitable framework. This is how democracy works. This is democracy. The apparent intransigence of the legal system in the face of nonviolent protest demonstrates, at least to me, the studied ignorance of the history of law, however well-versed a judge may be in a particular case law. Judges have the power to hand out all-encompassing injunctions that stipulate anyone, anywhere, and who in any way contributes to impeding logging operations in our public forests is guilty of contempt of court. But I am especially troubled when citizens like myself are brought before the same judge who gave this all-encompassing order. I am worried that judges could then become a party to the dispute instead of impartial arbitrators and feel compelled to defend their own orders. This would be unfair, unjust, and a disgrace to a supposedly democratic country. At 72, some people think I'm too old to risk jail sentences like I've just received, but I tell them it wasn't always this way. We evolved as a species in communities where elders were routinely moderators of society and stewards of the land, not just chiefs, but all elders. Evolutionary harmony between young and old has been destroyed culturally by the worship of technology, by the pervasive youth fetish that considers aging a disease, and by an economic production system that turns everything into a commodity to be bought and sold. Elders are encouraged by our new culture to be self-indulgent, play golf, take cruises if one can afford them, if not, play the slots or bingo. We are not encouraged to use our talents and experiences in any serious way, certainly not to interfere with the feverish destruction of our life support systems. People ask, but what about the forest workers' jobs? And I ask, but why should we value jobs that destroy our communal property? We need a revolution in our forests. Tree farm licenses are given out only to the largest, most ruinous of corporations. This is a scandal. It has always been a scandal. Our very first forest minister actually sold the cutting rights to our forests back in the 1950s to the largest companies. Bob Summers spent 2 years in prison for this, but the stolen goods, our property, remain in the hands of the receivers of that stolen property. But we, as the rightful owners of the forests of British Columbia, can demand our property back. We can start with Interfor. Each of the old-growth trees in her forest is hijacking out of the Elijo Valley is worth $100,000 or more. This public forest, and this should be public money, right? A goodly portion, anyway. Ah, but no. Not only does Interfor get it all, aside from a mere pittance that they have to grudgingly pay for stumpage fees, but taxpayers have to pay for cleaning up the mess Interfor leaves behind in the forest. And to add absolute insult to absolute injury, citizens also have to pay for the lengthy mass trials Interfor initiates against protesters, but which are speedily taken over by the Crown, which in turn results in lengthy incarcerations also paid for by the taxpayers. What a sweet deal for Interfor. They must howl with laughter all the way to the bank. We can manage our own forests. There are many models to choose from. We have examples from other countries, models that respect the forest, that treat nature with respect instead of contempt. I was raised in the swamps of southern Louisiana, a rainforest so generous in its varied life forms that one could literally live off the land. There were quail and wild geese, catfish, crawfish, shrimp and crabs, wild salad greens, and wild rice. Just to gladden the landscape, we had pelicans and flamingos. And to remind us that our earthly paradise wasn't meant just for our enjoyment, there were alligators, wild cats, and water moccasins. But all this was before the draining of the swamps, before the logging of the cypress groves, and before the felling of the mighty oaks. Today, the rainforests of my youth have disappeared, along with most of the wildlife save the water moccasins. Two-thirds of Louisiana's wetlands have disappeared, and there is a three-year drought upon the land. The climate has become so hot without the climate-moderating wetlands that many southerners have lost their historic fear of hell, having already become accustomed to it, so to speak. The ecosystems on this continent are extremely fragile, and so is democracy. If we want these twin wonders, these incredible gifts that make life worth living, then we must fight for these over and over again. If we don't, the alternatives are complete corporate rule and trashed logging-induced deserts of a continent that we will leave to our grandchildren. I don't want to be in jail. I want to be home with my family. However, I feel the issues expressed here are so important they must be voiced regardless of the consequences. We are a democratic nation. I believe in Canada, and all the power ultimately resides in the will and consent of the people. Betty Krawcheck resides in the open living unit at the Burnaby Correctional Center for Women. She spends much of her time working on an appeal of both her convictions and her sentence. If you'd like to write to Betty, here's her address. Betty Krawcheck, I'll spell that, K-R-A-W-C-Z-Y-K, and of course her number, 03-79-3924. That's Betty Krawcheck, 03-79-3924, a Burnaby Correctional Center for Women. That's the Burnaby Correctional Center for Women, 7900 Fraser Park Drive, Burnaby, British Columbia, V5J5H1. Burnaby Correctional Center for Women, 7900 Fraser Park Drive, Burnaby, British Columbia, V5J5H1, Canada. And be sure to put Canadian postage on it if you're mailing it from the States. If you want more information, you can contact the Western Canada Wilderness Committee. Their address, 651 Johnson Street, Victoria, British Columbia, V8W1M7. That's the Western Canada Wilderness Committee, 651 Johnson Street, Victoria, B.C., V8W1M7, Canada, or you could give them a call at 250-388-9292. That's 250-388-9292. I want to thank Betty and the Vancouver Sun for that editorial letter. Okay, moving slightly south. Here's some news about the Interior Columbia Basin Ecosystem Management Project, or the ICBEMP. It's a dismal failure that must be stopped. If there ever was a project to disillusion the participating public, it is the Interior Columbia Basin Ecosystem Management Project, or the ICBEMP. After 6 years and $47 million, the agencies have developed a plan for 64 million acres of the Columbia Basin that poses a serious threat. The joint effort by the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management covers public lands in eastern Washington and Oregon, Idaho, and western Montana. ICBEMP is one step from final approval, but it remains unclear if the administration will sign the record of decision to implement the plan. We need to urge the White House officials to put it in the trash can where it belongs. Logging would rise by 22% under the plan, close to a billion board feet a year, and it would also continue subsidizing harmful public land grazing while effectively ignoring threats posed by off-road vehicles and invasive species. It is crystal clear that the planning agencies have no intention of providing any substantive enforceable protections for threatened wildlife for watersheds in the basin. The enforceable protections currently provided by Packfish, Infish, and Eastside Screens will be ditched in favor of massive discretion for the agencies. The EIS is particularly flawed in five areas. One, it has no enforceable baseline protection for old-growth forests and rare forest types in the basin. Two, it contains no standards or guidelines that define forest health. Three, road building is allowed everywhere and anywhere with few minor exceptions for A1 watersheds. Four, at-risk rare shrub and grassland species are expected to continue to decline due to a lack of rangeland restoration projects. And five, the A1-A2 subwatersheds do not protect most of the bull trout occupied areas and subpopulations. What to do? Please contact George Frampton, Council on Environmental Quality, Washington, D.C., 20501. That's George Frampton, Council on Environmental Quality, Washington, D.C., 20501, and urge him to scrap the ICBEMP and urge the administration do not sign the record of decision. You can also submit official comments and protests to the agencies in writing. Mail it to Director, BLM, and Chief, U.S. Forest Service, ICBEMP Protests, P.O. Box 65480, Washington, D.C., 20035. Once again, that's Director, BLM, and Chief, U.S. Forest Service, ICBEMP Protests, P.O. Box 65480, Washington, D.C., 20035. Your protest needs to include your name, mailing address, phone number, and interest in the project, and a statement of the issues to be protested. If you'd like more information, please contact George at wafc@teleport.com. That's wafc@teleport.com. All right, let's move into animal news here. Bad news for the salmon. Salmon sex changes worry researchers. And this written by Kim Murphy of the Seattle Times. 4/5 of the female salmon spawned in the last free-flowing stretch of the Columbia River apparently began life as male salmon, raising troubling new questions about the survival of the Pacific Northwest's signature fish species. In a study that could provide ammunition in the battle over the massive hydropower dams that traverse the Columbia and Snake Rivers, researchers at the University of Idaho and Washington State University found significant sex reversals in the fall Chinook salmon that spawn on the Columbia's Hanford Reach in central Washington. The research is unsettling because salmon runs in the Hanford Reach, where the Columbia passes relatively unbridled through the vast Hanford Nuclear Reservation, are the healthiest in a region where many are on the brink of collapse. The cause of embryonic gender shift is unknown, but there are suspects. Environmental estrogens are one possibility. They are the chemical byproducts potentially traceable to pesticides and industrial runoff that have been linked to issues such as early puberty and infant mortality in humans. Another important factor is the hydropower dams, which produce temperature fluctuations in the river of a kind known to cause gender modifications in fish. If that is the case, it could add fuel to the debate over breaching dams in the West to save the region's disappearing salmon runs. The Clinton administration is scheduled to release its final recommendations on that issue soon. One obvious culprit, radiation seeping from the Hanford Reservation, has been discounted. The amount of radioactivity known to be going into the river is too small to have produced such changes, the study's authors have said. But researchers cautioned that it is too early to draw any conclusion from the findings, which examined salmon in a single year and did not look at the effects of the gender shifts on the overall salmon population. I think maybe that what this points out is that there's a whole lot we don't know or understand right now, said Gary Thorgard, biology professor at Washington State and co-author of the study. Thorgard and University of Idaho zoology professor James Nagler said, however, there may be worrisome implications if the gendered altered fish produce generations of, quote, super males that skew the population too heavily toward the male gender. Unfortunately, I can't put this in a positive light, Nagler said. but we really can't say anything relative to whether this could be a major factor in the decline of salmon populations. Using a genetic test developed by British Columbian fisheries scientist Bob Devlin, who previously has documented gender shifts in fish, the salmon researchers were able to identify chromosomes in the fish after they had spawned and died. We have found that a majority of female Chinook salmon sampled carry a genetic marker that is found only in male salmon. The best explanation for these results is that these females have been sex-reversed and are in fact male, Nagler said. There are no similar reversals in hatchery salmon that spawned near the Hanford Reach but were originally hatched in well water, indicating that whatever caused the phenomenon probably occurred in the river water while the fish were developing in their eggs or shortly after hatching. These results may explain in part the difficulties some salmon have had in reproducing in the Columbia River Basin, Nagler said. Fish have the same chromosomal sex composition as any other species. Females have two X chromosomes, and males have an X and a Y. The sex of the offspring is determined by what male sperm fertilizes an egg, but the salmon researchers found that 80% of the females they studied, females that had clearly produced eggs and spawned, had at least one Y chromosome, identical to males. While normal female salmon will produce nothing but X chromosome eggs, leaving male fish to determine the sex of the offspring, the sex-reversed females will produce half X eggs and half Y eggs. If those Y eggs are fertilized by a Y chromosome sperm, they will produce a YY chromosome or super male fish whose characteristics in the wild are completely unknown. Indeed, this may already have happened, the researchers conceded. Whether this kind of fish is viable, that's a big question, Nagler said. But if they do survive and they were to return in appreciable numbers to spawn, the scenario is that we would have an increase in the number of males in the population because all the offspring of this fish would be male. Over a period of years, this could skew the fish population so far that reproduction rates would fall, the researchers said. YY male fish have been produced in the laboratory, but there is no way of identifying them in the wild unless they are captured and bred. The study, published in the January issue of the Environmental Health Perspectives, is one of the first insights that basic problems in fish production and genetics could be a significant factor affecting the decline of salmon populations, according to Michael Skinner, director of the Center for Reproductive Biology at Washington State and the University of Idaho. But Washington State officials said the study, if it flags the presence of harmful chemicals in the Columbia, could mean as much for humans as for fish. The results are interesting. They point to some sort of environmental problem that we may need to deal with, said Craig Buzak, conservation biologist for the State Department of Fish and Wildlife. But it's not clear to me that this really poses a hazard to the viability of the fish run. Oh, boy. Moving into more news. What is the Free Trade Area of the Americas? Well, the Free Trade Area of the Americas, FTAA, is a free trade and investment agreement being negotiated between the governments of North Central and South America and the Caribbean. It is modeled after the North America Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, between North America, Canada, and Mexico. The goal of the FTAA is to create a free trade and investment zone that extends from northern Canada to the southern tip of Chile. As with NAFTA, free trade and investment means reducing government regulations on corporations, opening markets to foreign competition, and expanding trade in all products, including forest products. In fact, it appears the FTAA will include a global free logging agreement like that proposed and thus far defeated at the World Trade Organization. We can use NAFTA as a model to predict the impact of FTAA on forests. After signing NAFTA, all three NAFTA countries lowered protections for forests and biodiversity. 15 U.S. forest product companies set up new operations in Mexico, taking advantage of lower environmental and labor safeguards. U.S. law is designed to protect forests, the environment, and small, locally owned mills can be challenged under FTAA as trade barriers. If challenged and defeated, these laws would have to be eliminated or the U.S. would face costly trade sanctions. The record of trade agreements versus the environment thus far proves that when faced with a trade-off between free trade and environmental protection, the environment always loses. What can you do? Learn more and get involved in the campaign to protect forests from international trade and investment, such as the FTAA, by contacting American Lands Alliance, their number 202-547-9095. That's 202-547-9095. Or go to their webpage at www.americanlands.org. And you can also join American Lands and other activists from around the world in Quebec, Canada, April 20th through 22nd for protest education and organizing events at the Summit of the Americas when the governments meet to finalize the free trade of America, free trade area of the Americas. Brazil has launched a $435 million program to fight illegal logging, mining, and drug trafficking in the Amazon rainforest, which is home to about 50% of the world's plant and animal species. The program will establish an air surveillance system and send police out across the country's 1.9 million square miles. Last year, illegal logging and farming destroyed an area in the Brazilian Amazon larger than Hawaii. In a more local effort to protect Brazil's environment, Fabio Luiz de Oliveira Rosa, a fellow with the nonprofit Ashoka organization, is working with rural people around the country to make their farming practices more sustainable and improve their lives through the use of solar-generated power. And the international climate talks in The Hague, Netherlands, collapsed a month ago with U.S. and European negotiators unable to agree on a plan for reducing emissions of heat-trapping greenhouse gases. The 2 weeks of negotiations were intended to flesh out the details of the Kyoto Climate Change Treaty, but in the end, the Europeans rejected a plan they said would have allowed the U.S. to get too much credit for calling its forests and farmlands carbon sinks, thereby avoiding real cuts in the burning of fossil fuels and emissions of carbon dioxide. It was the second blow for the top American negotiator, Frank Loy, who got hit in the face with a custard pie by an environmentalist. So much for the biotic baking brigade backing off on the climate. No way. The real obstacle to progress on climate change, writes Bill McKibben of The Grist, is that Americans just don't realize how deadly serious the problem really is. And in the wake of those collapsed climate change talks in The Hague, Netherlands, the Clinton administration has proposed that top officials from the U.S. and the European Union meet to reach a deal on how to account for cuts in greenhouse gas emissions. The meeting would include the EU's lead climate negotiator, the top U.S. environmental official at the State Department, and Germany's environment minister. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for news today. If you want to get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzief@cruzio.com. That's cruzief@cruzio.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Be sure to send any and all announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Once again, that's Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. You can listen to Earth First Radio live on your computer every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Just go to the website, www.microradio.net/FRSC. And listen in. That's www.microradio.net/FRSC. If you can't listen in live, you can always find Earth First Radio archive shows on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, for all.net. And those are MP3 files, so they're easy to play. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, and portions of this newscast were prepared with the help of Stefan and Eon. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney off the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to a group called Mariposa. The song's called Sacred Land. Solstice, and a happy new year.
I have seen in the sky, I didn't know before the summer died. Life is but upon the sacred land, all our love. my